The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Welcome to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. I haven't spoken with you, and I think it's been 3 months. I ran for Sandpoint City Council, and so I couldn't do my show during those times. Otherwise, I'd have to give everybody else an hour of equal time, and there was 8 of us. So there was a lot of us, but I'm glad to be back. I ran for City Council, and I did that, and I came in dead last, and I'm okay with that. I'll be honest, I didn't really want the job. I also really don't often want to go to certain social events, but when I go, I make the very best of it. And I ran because I get really tired of sitting around listening to people wasting so much energy on what's going on in Washington, D.C., and all this vitriol and anger. And you know what? You can't do anything about Washington, D.C. except vote. And you're not going to change anybody's vote with your rhetoric and nonsense and us versus them. They're going to vote the way they're going to vote. So all you do when you fly your Trump flag or put Trump signs in your yard or put Biden signs in your yard or buy idiotic things like let's go Brandon, lowering yourself to name calling, really, is you're just alienating everybody around you. Nobody's going to vote for Trump because you have a flag in the back of your truck. Nobody's going to vote for Biden because you have a sign in his yard. I don't know why anybody even does it. People are going to vote that we're going to vote. The signs, the flags, all that was because we didn't have the internet. Well, now we have the internet and we've got 24-hour news for good or bad. So my point is, take that energy. I mean, half of your rage and whatever you have and stop watching Fox News and stop watching CNN and get down to the city council. And I tell people this all the time. And so finally I thought, well, I better put my money where my mouth is. And so that's what I was doing. I was, a city council is a judicial body, which is a thing that my clients often forget. And you all should remember that when you're in with a city council, when you apply to a city council or any other governmental body, you're in court. And so whatever you do at that stage of the game, if you don't like it and you come to somebody like me, well, we're stuck with it. That record, what you made, is what we have to deal with. And so just remember that. That's a little side note. It's also a legislative body. You know, they don't just rule on permits and things like that. They also pass ordinances. Well, legislative and judicial bodies, and I'm a lawyer, I figured it made sense. And also because I have been in litigation with every single kind of governmental entity you can think of, from the feds to various cities and counties, sewer districts, you name it. And so I've seen a lot of things, and I thought I was particularly well positioned to keep the city from doing things like overreaching and, you know, like making you pay for your sidewalks just because you built an ADU, which, let's remind you, they cannot do that. Do not build a sidewalk because they tell you you have to, because you do not have to build a sidewalk. And they'll say, well, there's a statute. Well, yeah, there were statutes that said that African Americans and white people couldn't be married either. And then a court says, sorry, you can't do that. So no, the city of Sandpoint can't make you build your sidewalk. Anyway, I'm glad that I didn't win. And then I was really affirmed in my position when a lot of talk during the campaign was about workforce housing. And workforce housing is not affordable housing. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about dormitory style living, where you have one common kitchen. You know, your wife and kids don't live with you, unless, of course, they work in the service industry, then they can. But other than that, you have to work in certain service industries, or you don't get to live there. And so, like, imagine if you had, you're 22, you're on the East Coast, you see an ad in the paper that says, get to Schweitzer, we have a job and a place to live. And then you would look at it on Google Earth, and then you would go pack your bags and start hitchhiking if that's what you had to do. But for now, you know, everybody would love to live here, but you can't come here and work. I mean, my wife took a job, a county job, because she's a lawyer, and so she could, and she's trained in it, and there was no way they were going to get anybody to fill that position. Out of law school with student loans, moving to Sandpoint on what they pay? No way. And she took it, and she likes it, so I'm glad. So anyway, what I was going to say is the city council, then we need workforce housing. Apparently, I haven't dug in all the details, so I may be speaking out of turn. Lighthouse had a plan for just that. And then I think the city council, after the election, shut it down and said, nope, we got to preserve our industrial land. So, well, yeah, you're not going to have a lot of industry if you don't have workers to work in the industry. And you can't pay workers who work in industrial plants enough money to possibly move to Sandpoint. So something has got to give. Anyway, it's good to be back. We'll go to our first break. And when we come back, we'll discuss something that I hope you all pay very close attention to. No matter what you think about abortion rights, is I'm going to explain to you this Texas law and why, if you want to storm the Capitol, that would be the reason. Anyway, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Glad to be back after a few months. Again, email me. Common Law, one word, number 7, letter B, at gmail.com. Surely there is something you all have a question about. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I go into a cocktail party, I get 5 questions, but you all have the opportunity to engage, and you're not. So I want you to. Otherwise, I'll just keep talking, which I think my wife would appreciate. I don't know if everybody else will. All right, I'm going to talk about a very serious subject, but first I want to tell you 2 useless facts that I think are just fun in the last 3 months. One, apparently a lot more people know than I. I never knew this, but apparently the term gerrymandering is because some guy was drawing a district that was very favorable to whatever party he wanted to win, which is what's going on right now, and his name was Jerry. And the district looked like a salamander, so they call it gerrymandering. I mean, who would have thunk? Now, here's the other one that I thought was more fun, is the rerun. Where did it come from? The I Love Lucy show in the 50s, I think it was live, and Lucy was on it, and she was, like, pregnant. And she was one of the very first women, I mean, to be on TV pregnant. And so they went through all that. Well, and then when she had her baby, she needed some time off, and so the producers were asking Desi Arnaz, you know, what are we going to do? What about these shows? And he said, well, just run the ones we've already done. And they laughed him out of the room and said, nobody's going to, why would they want to watch that? Well, and apparently they did, and that's where the rerun was born. So I just thought those were pretty interesting things. You probably don't, but maybe you do. Anyway, so let's talk about the Texas law. But since the last time I talked to you, the Supreme Court's considered it a couple of times. They haven't really ruled on the law. I'm not going to get into the weeds on that, what they were doing when they were having the debate. It's more about, that was more about whether or not you could get an injunction to prevent its enforcement versus just having to get charged with violating it and then challenging it. Usually it is like, for example, if you have a gun ban and at a place in the city and you don't like it, you can't get an injunction telling the city they can't enforce it. You have to go in there and violate it and get charged, and then you can challenge the constitutionality of it. That's what that was about. But why is the law so dangerous? Well, because I don't care what you think about abortion, and I just don't care. This is not about abortion. This is about everything that Americans hold true and dear, called your civil liberties, your civil rights. I mean, we've had people starting fist fights because they have to wear a mask. And incidentally, next one who says wearing a mask is some sort of fascism, you're a fat, lazy American. I mean, that's fascism? Why don't you go down and talk to people living under Baby Doc or maybe Saddam Hussein or, you know, I can think of just a few other people that could give you a little more, I don't know, fascism than what that is. But anyway, that's just weak. It's not fascism. You're just being lazy and you got nothing else to think about except that. Anyway, sorry. This is about your civil rights. And why is it? Because what did Texas do? Texas, okay, backing up. There's a United States Supreme Court case, you may have heard of it, that says a woman has a constitutional right to choose to have an abortion within certain parameters. Okay, so that's already done. That's in place. Texas, if they would have just passed a law that outlawed abortion in violation of that Roe versus Wade, well, it would have just got struck down. If they had passed a law, this law, that said what it says, and the state was the one saying it was illegal, this wouldn't even be a question. So what did they do? They said, well, we're going to create a private cause of action. So if any citizen thinks that there's an abortion provider who's providing it after 6 weeks, they can sue them for 10 grand in attorney's fees and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that just stinks to high heaven right off the bat. I mean, you don't have to be a legal scholar to go, well, wait a minute, couldn't they just pass a law that allows me to sue my neighbor because he has a Trump flag in his truck and I don't like it? Yes, that's exactly how you should be thinking, folks, because that's exactly what this does. It doesn't matter if it's talking about abortion rights. It doesn't matter if it's talking about gun rights. It doesn't matter if it's talking about your right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. It doesn't matter if it has to do with your constitutional right to have children and be parents. If a local government, be it your city, your county, your state, doesn't like something that is constitutionally permitted, if this Texas law is upheld, they can pass laws that allow private citizens to sue you for it. I mean, people who wear sidearms into public places like stores, you know, I don't really care. Or compensators, as I call them, I don't really care if they want to wear those. A lot of people get really uncomfortable by that. So why couldn't the city of Sandpoint just pass an ordinance that says, well, you know, you can't wear, if you see anybody who's making you uncomfortable, then with their gun, go ahead and sue them for 10 grand in attorney's fees. I mean, this is not slippery slope. Oh my God, the sky is falling stuff, folks, here. There is no difference between any constitutionally protected right. If you allow an exception like this for this one, it applies across the board. And if you want to storm the Capitol, this is why. If you need to make it known that this is not okay. And this is why in the Supreme Court, you had what we call amicus briefs. And amicus briefs, ordinarily, you can't just file a brief with an appellate court because you care. You have to have some kind of grounds to care. And that's what amicuses are, meaning we're not parties to this lawsuit, but we think we should have something to say here. Well, you had gun rights groups filing amicus briefs against the Texas law. So you had a group traditionally aligned with right-wing principles, which includes, you know, outlawing abortion, who was saying this is extremely dangerous because this would apply to all your constitutional rights, and it would. And so why anybody who's for abortion thinks this is okay, I mean, you know what? If you're for abortion and so this is okay, which means that you got one issue in your life, which maybe you're the same person who voted for Trump for one reason because he was for or anti-abortion, then just get out of our society. Stop now. Stop participating. Stop voting because you are not thinking. You are so wound up in one issue that you're willing to scrap everything else just so you can get that. And granted, it's an issue that there is a very tenuous argument making a connection between an organized society and outlawing abortion. That is really thin. I mean, they say, oh, it's hard on the mother and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'd venture a guess to say that only poor people having babies because they can't afford to go to California to get an abortion, not going to be a good situation. That'll probably cause a lot more stress on everybody. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, you should really care about this Texas law. You should really make sure that everybody who works for you knows that it's not okay and it needs to be stopped. I don't know if the feds could do that. I think they probably could. And then forgetting, you know, the overall implications of the law, you just back up and look at it logically. If the police can't come search your house for no reason, you can't allow a private citizen to file an injunction to get or file a lawsuit to get an injunction to search your house because they think you have drugs in there. I mean, you can't empower a private citizen to do something that the government itself can't do. I mean, that's what it comes down to, and that's why the law wouldn't and probably won't survive. That's just the scariest thing I've ever seen. And if it doesn't scare you, you're not paying attention. Anyway, What do we want to talk about next? That one just upsets me to no end. And if it doesn't, you, I swear to you, you need to think harder. It is really, really dangerous. The next topic is one that a lot of people don't understand, and I really didn't understand it myself. And I was doing some research, and I came across it. And this is more along the lines of, you know, everyday stuff that I'm supposed to tell you about that might help you, you know, work your way through this society. But it's about found property. Like, what happens when you find something? And, you know, that's one of those things where you hear things like possession is 9/10 of the law, and you're just, you know, it's not the law. It's just something somebody said, but people like to repeat. But basically, there are five types of found property, and one's called abandoned property, and that's one the owner has discarded or just kind of terminated their ownership, but with not giving it to anybody else. There's lost property, that which the owner has involuntarily parted with through neglect or carelessness. And then there's mislaid property, which apparently is different than lost property, that sells what the owner has intentionally set down in a place, but where he can find it, but then he can't find it. That's kind of the story of my life. That's why I have tiles, you know, those little things that beep. I have them on everything. I mean, I'd attach one in my head if it wasn't on my neck. Treasure trove. This is a category exclusively for gold or silver coin in plate, bullion, and sometimes in paper money equivalents, found or concealed in the earth or a house or other private place. And then the last one is one maybe you heard about recently when those people found that jar of coins. I'm not sure whose land that was on, but it's called embedded property. And it's that personal property which has become part of the natural earth, such as pottery in a sunken wreck of a steamship or a rotted away stack of gold-bearing quartz rock. These are from cases, obviously. I wouldn't come up with that stuff on my own. The finder of lost or abandoned property and treasure trove acquires the right to possess the property against the entire world, but the right for owner, regardless of where you find it. So if I found a big old diamond ring on my neighbor's front lawn before my neighbor did, and my neighbor had no idea whose it was, then it's mine, not his, which I think is pretty interesting. Now, if the ring had gotten embedded down into the dirt, well, no, now it's my neighbor's ring. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Abandoned. So really the only difference is if you find it and it's not buried, then you can take it if the person who owns the property doesn't own it. All of these rules, though, are subject to the true owner, meaning that if you find $10,000 in cash, the best advice would be just to, you know, I think tell the police put out an ad, and I think after so long, it becomes presumed abandoned, and then you can keep it. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I just came across it randomly. It's never actually come up in a case. It comes up in my house, as I said, every single day when I'm trying to get out of the house. But anyway, I think we will now go to break. This is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Email commonlaw7b@gmail.com if you have any questions, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Common Law. I am your host, Arthur Beislein. Remind you again to please shoot me an email if you want to hear about anything in particular, something you're curious about, something you saw on the news, something you're wondering what the city is doing. It's commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Before I jump into a kind of a squirrel topic, because I don't know, maybe you've sensed in my tone that I'm getting a little fed up with Trump and his merry band of idiots. Again, I don't care what side of this debate you're on, big government, little government, whatever. He is not the guy to do it. The man is a fascist in training. Look at what he does. Look at what he says. Look at who he admires. He is a scary, dangerous person. You should not, if you're voting for him, you need to ask yourself why. Because what are you afraid of? I mean, why would you possibly put, when did it become cool to be a jackass. I mean, what happened to manners maketh the man? I mean, next time somebody walks up to me, we got a Trump shirt on, I'm just going to insult them any way I want. And they get all offended. I'll say, no, I'm just saying what I think is on my mind. No, that's not okay, folks. It's never been okay. It's called being human. It's called tempering your behavior. It's called using your filter. It's called being respectful. That guy is an idiot. And there is no defending him. And anybody out there in Radio Land who wants to give it a go, come on down for the next show and you can sit right across the table from me and we can just listen to why you think that man should ever have been president of this country. Anyway, so before we move on to this squirrel, Trump and his buddies and all this, all these theories that are out there, what was the latest one? Oh yeah, you had to get vaccinated, so you needed to keep jobs, so go ahead and jump in a bath of borax? Really? I got a great real estate deal for you in down near the Everglades in Florida. Give me a call. We'll put it together. Just send me your money. It'll be fine. I mean, if you're going to believe that, what is the matter with you? So, but anyway, here's one thing that I have not heard that to me actually has a little credence as far as a theory goes. Just for a second, let's back up and give credit where credit is due to why we have these vaccines. It's the scientists, but Trump's administration had a big part in getting this done as quick as it did. Dr. Fauci, who doesn't like Trump, admitted that. A lot of people have admitted that. I admit that. It was, you know, I'm going to give credit where credit's due, even if I don't like the guy. So he was, if you're an anti-vaxxer, I'm only speaking to you. He was your guy, okay? And he and everybody at Fox News and every other Republican in Congress, as far as I know, has been vaccinated, but you're not. Because you've heard things about, you know, the vaccine. Well, here's what I think's going on. And there's kind of the proof in the pudding on this one, folks. Just for a second, consider that maybe it is the liberals that are putting out this misinformation on the vaccine. Because they know that you all are very distrustful. I mean, again, speaking to the anti-vaxxers, you're very distrustful of the government. And you will believe these things that you're hearing about what is wrong with these vaccines. And you won't get vaccinated. Well, so just for a second there, the liberals are the ones telling you all this nonsense about the vaccine. So you won't get vaccinated. And then guess who's going to die? You. And those who think like you. And guess what's happening? Just that. What is it? 95% of everybody who's dying from this stuff now is not vaccinated? It seems to me that if you had a theory that made sense, well, when you have some objectively provable proof, for lack of a, that's an awesome sentence. But it's there. I mean, that's who is in the hospital dying. It's people who think on generally, I know it's generalization, but for the most part, it's people who think in the right wing are the ones who are dying. And nobody knows where this vaccine information's coming from. So why wouldn't it be the liberals that are trying to convince you to not do it so you get sick and you die and we just cull the herd? And just get all the right-thinking people to stay alive and get rid of all the rest of you. Anyway, just a thought. You know, maybe you're one of those people that doesn't actually believe that the people that are all dying right now are not vaccinated, in which case I can't help you. I can't help you anyway. Anyway, but here's a little squirrel for you. I want you all to rewind, those of you who are old enough to do it, to, I don't know, about 30 years ago, and think back, maybe 35 years ago, and think back to when you used to watch football on Sunday, and there was like maybe two games on the whole weekend. You know, maybe a morning and an afternoon game, sometimes just an afternoon game. And then you'd have Monday Night Football, and that's all you saw. That was it. But there were 28 teams. And lots of TV markets. So why was it that when I was in Boise, I had to watch the Denver Broncos every weekend, but nothing else? And why was it that when you were in Sandpoint, you had to watch Seattle Seahawks every weekend, but nothing else? So how did that come to pass? You would think that more televised event means more advertising and more money. Well, that generally is the case, unless, of course, you can control the target market, meaning you have a captive audience and you know it, like the people who live in the Northwest who watch Seattle or the people who live in Boise who have to watch Denver. Plus, you have a captive audience because it's the only football on TV, and you're going to have everybody watching the same channel. All right, so you can remember that. College ball used to be the same way before 84. We'll get to that in a minute. So what is this about? Well, it's about anti-competitive behavior, okay? There are laws that basically say that I can't get together with five other attorneys in the room and we decide what we're going to set our rates at. You can't do that. And if you're thinking, you're going, well, wait a minute, the gas stations have all those big signs that advertise their prices, and we see advertised prices all over the place. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a scheme where people get together and they figure out how to basically get as much money out of you as they can without having to compete on price. That is what that's totally illegal. You can go to jail for it. Happens all the time. So now think of that in the NFL. So what do you got here? You've got 30 teams in two leagues, 15 apiece. I don't know. I think it's 30. I just watched Miami. I'm sick soul. But then you have each of those leagues, all those teams getting together and deciding where they're going to sell all of their games. Not where they're going to sell the Miami games or the Pittsburgh games, where they're going to sell the entire AFC package. Who gets to buy it? Now, from what I just told you about competitors getting together and deciding how much they're going to charge for their services in the smoke-filled room, that certainly sounds illegal now, doesn't it? Well, it would be illegal for them to do that. And that's how come back in the day, you didn't, you know, each team didn't negotiate their television rights. The whole league did. And so once you sold those rights, well, then it became the networks. They were the ones who chose what was on, where, and when. And if you want to run a snowmobile ad in a Seahawks game in the Northwest, you're going to make a lot more money than that snowmobile ad running the Seahawks game in Miami, Florida. And so that is what drove the massive profits. It's still driving the massive profits, as was the ability to do this. And so why can they do it? Why is it that if I want to watch my loser Dolphins lose every weekend, I have to pay for the Sunday ticket, which means I also have to buy DirecTV? Because they say, why can they do that? They can't, they should, well, they can. 1968, the Sports Broadcasting Act. And some of you who may have been paying attention to the, some of the debates about concussions on Capitol Hill and all that in football, once in a while, somebody would say that. They'd say, oh, well, if you guys don't want to do this, maybe we should look at the Sports Broadcasting Act. And, oh, then everybody shuts up and changes their tune. Why is that? Well, because the act says, because there's no way that professional teams could possibly survive without it, we're going to allow them to violate antitrust laws. No kidding. That's what it says. I mean, in 68, it wasn't the business it is now, but it was a pretty big business, not nearly as big, but that's why it got so big, folks, because of the enormous profits that everybody was making on controlling the market. And if you want proof, that's why you didn't see hardly any football back in the day on the weekends. All you got to do is look at, if you can remember, look at the 1983 college football or the 84 college football season versus the 85 college football season. Because in 84, a federal court told the NCAA, you are not a professional football team. You cannot bundle your games. The Big Ten can't sell all their games to one place. You know, whatever. They can't do that. Well, the very next year, you had four or five times as many games on in a weekend because each individual team could sell their own rights. And so they did. And so that expanded the amount of college football on TV. So that's how you know that it's restricting. And so that is why the NFL and the NBA have carte blanche to make as much money as they do. So don't blame the players and don't blame the owners. Don't blame anybody. I mean, the reason that everybody's making so much money is because they have an exemption from anti-competitive laws. And you know, I don't know if you're for that. All I know is that I get sick of having to have DirecTV and watch the Sunday Ticket, or my alternatives are go down to the bar on Sunday and sit there for 3 hours, which I don't really want to do that either. So anyway, I just, most people don't know about that. But it's just some of the little weird things that happen in our society that we just, people really don't know or understand about. And incidentally, you didn't hear me say baseball. Sports broadcasting, I think if you listen regularly, or maybe you heard the show with James McDonald, the bankruptcy guy, his dad was a law professor at my school, and he taught sports law, and it was a really interesting course. But one thing that was very clear is baseball is not like any other professional sport. The laws that apply to it, I mean, it's just, it's got a whole different jurisprudence behind it. And I think it started when the Supreme Court at one point said that baseball is not business, which, you know, I think we can all appreciate that that's pretty funny. So I think we're coming up on our, pretty close to our next break. And so this is Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. Common Law is number7b@gmail.com. Send me something if you want to hear about something, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Common Law. I'm your host, Arthur Beislein. My email, I'm going to say it as many times until somebody just tells, maybe you just send me an email and tell me to stop telling you the email. commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Let me know what you want to know about, or let me know if you just want to come down here and be on the show. I mean, if you got something to say and you want to get the mic and have your moment, I'll give you the conch and we can go. Anyway, I want to talk now about mediation, and I'm not going to talk a lot about it because my mother-in-law is a lawyer and a mediator in California. Yeah, it's kind of weird, huh? I got a nest of us. You got a mother-in-law, you got me, you got my wife, her ex-husband, my mother-in-law's, he was a lawyer. I don't know, target-rich environment, some people might call it that. Anyway, but what is mediation? People confuse these terms, mediation and arbitration. I'm almost sure that I've gone off about arbitration on this show, but I'll do it again in a minute. But that's different. Arbitration is the same as going to court, but way worse. Way worse than going to court. Just before I get there, if you see the word arbitration in a contract, do not sign it. Scratch it out. Refuse. You don't want it. It sounds like it's better than going to court. No, it's far worse. Anyway, we'll get to that. Mediation is a completely voluntary attempt by a third party who has no say in this, no dog in the fight, to get you to find a way to resolve your dispute. And they have no interest other than getting you to find a way to resolve it. And, you know, what I tell my clients and mediator will tell you, everything that happens in mediation is confidential. You can walk in there and say, yeah, I know, I'm lying totally, and doesn't matter. You can't use any of it. They want to have real free, open discourse. But I tell my clients, you figure out something that you can do that makes you absolutely want to throw up repeatedly, but you can do it. And that's what you do to get rid of a lawsuit. You take your money to Vegas, don't give it to me. It's just, sometimes they're unavoidable. Sometimes you got to go through, you got to go to court, find a way out. That's what mediation is. 95% of all my cases settle in mediation. And if they don't settle, it's usually because we don't know enough. Meaning I can't settle a case, if there's a bad foundation, unless I know how much it's going to cost to fix it. Right? That doesn't happen very often because we know better than to get in there before we know these things. But anyway, I just want to tell you maybe one or two stories, and maybe I already told you this one, but I'm going to tell it again because it's why I say swallow the bitter pill. And I'll get to the story in a second, but when I run into people that are talking about going to law school, the first thing I ask them is, are you someone who has a strong association between working hard and doing a good job and the right result being obtained? Because if you are, you're in the wrong job. Don't do it. You will be endlessly frustrated. It was the hardest thing that I ever dealt with right out of law school. It's like, what is wrong with these people? The answer to that's in that last word. People. We're not dealing with engineered concrete. We're not dealing with wood. We're not dealing with things that if you do it right, they should behave the way they're supposed to. We're dealing with human beings, and they never behave the way they're supposed to. Otherwise, I would have to get a real job. So why do you get out of lawsuits? Because you're dealing with humans. So anything can happen. And this story is a good one to demonstrate that. I had a client, he built a 7,000 square foot custom log home. The basement construction was stick frame and the log package sat on top of that. It was a daylighted basement. And so it was built on a hillside. Well, when they excavated the hillside, they dug down, and there's these two types of dirt you're looking for. You know, anything with organic material, topsoil is what we call it, right? You do not want topsoil under your foundation because the organics disintegrate and it shrinks down and your foundation's going to crack and move. So you dig down till you get this stuff called native soil, which is what they call it, which just means it's got no organics or very little. It's just compacted down nicely. It's not going to compact much more, if at all. So these guys, when they built this place, they, one, didn't scrub the whole side of topsoil, which is what you do with your tractor, your backhoe, whatever. You get rid of it all, then you don't got to worry about it. But they didn't do that. So they started at the top of the hill digging their big hole. They dug a big hole. They're pushing the dirt down the hill, you know, as they're moving forward into the hillside or out of, you know, to daylight the basement. Well, they get to a place where they have to drop the foundation down, you know, like 3 feet for the next level. They do that and they see the right color dirt, so they're good to go. Well, the dirt they were looking at was the dirt from up the hill. They had buried about 20 inches of organic material underneath all that other dirt, meaning that you had 20 inches of stuff that was going to go from 20 inches to 1 inch in about 20 years. And, well, it was right down the long axis of the house. So the whole back of the house is on good soil. The whole front of the house is on the stuff that's going to basically, you can just see, it's just going to crack. And so, and to fix that, it was an interesting fix. You had to go get these giant 14-foot screws from someplace in Montana. I think they're called Montana helical spears. And they just screw them into the ground, and then you attach them to the foundation. Well, that was fine, except the foundation's a foundation. It's not a bridge. And so you can't have the weight suspended over those parts in between the screws. So you had to go back and put this concrete slurry on. It was just like a $350,000 fix, and this was 15 years ago. Anyway, so we go to arbitration with a retired judge, and their expert witness and my expert witness, they both said, yes, in 20 years, this is going to go from 20 inches to 1 inch, if not less. So it's going to be a problem. Right? They both said that. So the opposing team said that too. You know what the judge said in the arbitrator? Well, judge arbitrator said, he said, oh, well, the basement floor of the house is basically level. The house was 2 years old. So you're going, what part of 20 years didn't you understand? I think the useful safe life of a 7,000 square foot custom log home is probably more than 20 years. So, you know, I did a motion to reconsider, and I said, well, dude, they said it, we said it, everybody said this is going to happen. Something has to be done. Nah, floor's level. That is why, one, you get rid of lawsuits, because that was a human being who did something completely unreasonable. I mean, there'd be no way that anybody could ever predict that kind of nonsense. I mean, that's just absolutely wrong. And but then here's the reason. That's why you get to arbitration. We're about out of time. I write my contracts because I know law. If you have an arbitration clause, then who cares? Because the arbitrator can do whatever they want. And there's nothing you can do about it unless you can show they were biased. That case I just described, it would have been appealed and we would have won. You can't do that in an arbitration. Anyway, I think we're wrapping up. I'm glad to be back. Hope you all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays, and we will talk to you next year.